is to rest so I can heal him. Creighton's gun falls silent. I look behind me, fearing the worst. But he's merely out of ammo. He chucks the gun over his shoulder and catches up to us.
"We're not going to make it to the dam," he yells. "Run to the lake!"
The rain starts up again as the four of us change direction. Bullets zip into our grassy footprints and ricochet off boulders. The clouds shift over us with a roar. A second later, it's as if we've gone under a bridge. The rain just stops. I look over my shoulder, and I see that just a few paces back, the rain still falls heavy and hard. The wind picks up significantly, and suddenly, the Mogadorians behind us are stuck in the worst rainstorm I've ever seen. They completely disappear in a blur. Our shoes slip over the sand on the shore, and Ella and Creighton dive into the water headfirst.
"I can't do it, Marina,"
Hector says, stopping before his feet reach the water. I drop my chest and grab his arm and say,
"I can fix you, Hector. You can make it."
"It wouldn't make any difference. I don't know how to swim."
"I'm Marina of the Sea, Hector, remember?"
I allow the iciness to spread from my fingertips to the bullet hole in his arm. I watch it turn from black and gray and red to a tan patch of wrinkled skin. I quickly concentrate on the bite wound on his stomach beneath his shirt, and Hector suddenly stands up straight with energy. I look into his eyes.
"As the Queen of the Sea, I will swim with you."
"But you have that,"
Hector says, pointing at the chest.
"You'll have to hold it then,"
I say, dropping it into his arms. We jog into the water until our feet no longer touch the lake floor, and then I wrap my arm around Hector's chest and paddle with my left. Hector hugs the chest to his stomach, and he floats on his back, his head just above water. Ella and Creighton tread water in the middle of the lake, and I pull Hector towards them. The clouds overhead dissipate, shrinking into 100 wispy lines of gray in the sky. The advancing Mogadorians are no longer a blur in a rainstorm, and the moment they can see, they charge at the lake, with dozens of crawls yipping in front of them. A tiny black speck falls from above as the last cloud disappears, and the closer the speck gets, the more it appears to be a human. Wearing a large blue pendant around her neck, she lands on the shore, rippling the sand. It's a strikingly beautiful girl with raven-colored hair. And the second I see her, I know she's the one I've been dreaming of, the one I painted on the cave's wall.
"She's one of us," I shout.
The girl looks around. We make eye contact, and then she vanishes a moment later. I'm shocked, crushed, believing I must have imagined her.
"Where'd she go?"
Ella asks. The moment I realize Ella saw her too, that I hadn't imagined her, I watch as the two nearest crawls are somehow yanked backwards in the air. They're hovering, yipping and snarling at something behind them, and then they slam into each other until they fall limp. One crawl goes sailing into the legs of two soldiers, and the other is swung in the air, connecting with other crawls and soldiers.
"Invisibility. She has the legacy of invisibility," Creighton breathes.
"She's invisible?"
I'm amazed and jealous at the same time. But most of all, I'm grateful. Every crawl that touches the water is yanked backwards by an unseen hand and slammed into the hard sand, or a Mogadorian soldier. A dropped cannon rises from the grass and starts firing in all directions. Crawl after crawl is destroyed. Dozens of Mogadorians burst into clouds of ash. Cannon blasts come from the other side of the lake, and I spin to see 20 or more Mogadorians wading in up to their waists. Rays of light hit the water all around us, creating enough steam that I can barely see Hector in front of me.
Ella!
I shout.
Over here!
She yells from my left.
Take Hector!
She wraps her arm around Hector's chest.
Why?
Because I'm not going to stay out here while that girl fights all by herself. This is my war, too.
Before anyone can stop me, I sink below the surface, and the water instantly tickles my lungs. I swim deeper, until the green-blue color of the lake becomes gray. I see the hulking body of Olivia below me. She's lying lifeless on the lake floor, clouds of blood billowing from the hundreds of bite wounds on her back. I head towards the opposite shore, and after a minute, I can see the legs of the Mogadorians. I swim next to the one farthest on the left. I plant my feet in the muddy bottom and launch myself out of the water. The Mogadorian doesn't have enough time to react as I toss him towards the middle of the lake with my mind. I float his cannon into my hands, shoot him, and never let go of the trigger. The Mogadorians along the lake burst into ash, and when I've killed them all, I aim towards the hundreds near the vehicles. There's movement in the water behind me, and I'm too slow. A crawl jumps and sinks its teeth into my side. The pain is immediate and horrible, as if someone was holding a hot branding iron to my ribs. The beast whips me headfirst into the water, and then against the sand of the shore. I catch my breath and scream as it arcs me back over and into the water again. I'm sure this is how I will die, but suddenly, the crawl's mouth widens and releases me. I fall onto my stomach, on the shore, and watch as the crawl's mouth continues to widen until I hear bones snapping. The raven-haired girl materializes before my eyes, her hands on the beast's quivering lips. She looks back at me before yanking the jaws completely vertical, killing the crawl.
"Are you okay?" the girl asks me.
I lift up my shirt and place a hand on my wound.
"I will be in a second."
She ducks a blast from a cannon.
"Good. What number are you?"
7.
"I'm 6," she says before vanishing.
The iciness spreads from my fingers over my body, but I know I won't be able to heal myself completely before the oncoming wave of Mogadorian soldiers reaches me. I roll into the lake and stay underwater. My wound is almost healed when I rise above the surface. Number 6 is on top of one of the armored Humvees with a glowing sword. She's fighting several soldiers at once, hacking off body parts, blocking cannon fire with her blade, using telekinesis to aim a floating cannon high above her so it blasts through dozens of Mogadorians on the formation's edge. She then hurls her sword into a crowd, impaling 3 soldiers at once. Number 6 grabs the large gun mounted on top of the vehicle and mows down dozens of Mogadorians in seconds. There are only 20 or 30 soldiers left, maybe 4 crawls. Number 6 holds one hand over her head, while the gun in the other shoots and destroys the Humvees along the shore. Dark clouds form over the mountains, and bolts of lightning crack and split the ground near her. The Mogadorians show fear for the first time, and I watch a few drop their weapons and run towards the woods.
"Out of the water!"
I yell, fearful of the lightning. Ella drags Hector to the edge of the lake, and Creighton follows. I reach the shore near Number 6 and pick up 2 cannons. I struggle to keep my footing as I press both triggers, turning more soldiers to ash, destroying 2 of the crawls. An injured soldier hiding behind a wrecked Humvee
tosses a grenade at number six's back, but I'm able to shoot it in the air. The explosion rotates number six and the mounted gun, and a moment later, the injured soldier is nothing but ash. I can't keep my eyes off of number six. Her strength is mesmerizing. The blue pendant bounces around as the gun in her one hand cuts down more and more soldiers. She rotates to her left and blows a crawl into bits, and then she rotates to her right and takes out several more Mogadorians with a bolt of lightning. The valley is bright and smoky. It's damp and charred. I look around me and can't believe that victory will be ours in just a matter of seconds. Creighton races over, and I toss him one of my guns, and instantly he's killing soldiers, retreating into the woods. Hector runs with my chest, and soon he and Ella stand behind me. I nod towards number six and smile at my friends, thinking that the worst is over. But that's when Ella raises her eyes over my head, and her face turns white.
"Pykins!"
Ella yells. Four of the horned monsters run down the mountainside at full speed. Directly below them, number six is preoccupied with a few remaining soldiers and the crawl. I uproot as many silver firs as I can and send them like rockets. Four hit the lead one, and it falls backwards into the path of the other three, and it's crushed and killed in the stampede.
"Number six!"
I shout. She hears me, and I point to the pikins rumbling down into the valley. She spins with a gun and blows the knees off the monster on the left. It tumbles down faster than the other two can run, and number six jumps from the Humvee a moment before the dead pikin flattens it with an echoing crunch. Creighton and I shoot our cannons at the other two, but they're too fast, splitting up when they reach the valley floor. The clouds roar when number six stands, and an enormous bolt of lightning crashes into one of the pikins, cutting off its arm. It bellows and falls to its knees, but quickly regains its balance and charges ahead with blood spurting from its side. The other pikin dodges Creighton's fire and rushes in from the other direction. We all run towards number six, but Hector is too slow with my chest in his arms. The pikin closes in, and before I can help, the one-armed monster reaches down and snatches Hector and my chest in its fist.
"No!"
I scream.
"Hector!"
I'm in such shock that when the pikin throws a lifeless Hector and my chest into the lake, I don't use my telekinesis to stop either from sinking. Number six has killed the other pikin. She turns towards us now and holds both hands up to the sky. A lightning bolt severs the monster's head from its body. For the first time all day, there is silence. I lean into number six, look at Ella and Creighton, and the fire and destruction behind them, and I know that these quiet moments are about to become rare in my life.
"Your chest, Marina," Creighton says. "You have to go get it."
I turn to number six and hug her.
"Thank you. Thank you, number six."
"I'm sure we'll get a chance to do it again sometime."
She wraps her arms around my shoulders.
"And just call me Six."
"I'm Marina. This is Creighton and Ella. She's number 10. Ella steps forward and shrinks to her 7-year-old body. She extends her small hand towards Six, who has her mouth open, speechless. Creighton starts to explain Ella and the second ship to Six as I walk into the lake. I feel its coolness for the first time. I swim to the middle and dive, descending until the water is devoid of any light and my feet touch the muddy floor. I circle the bottom until I see my chest. I rock it back and forth to dislodge it from the mud suction. Swimming with one arm, I start to ascend. When the water turns blue, I see Hector's body and wrap my other arm around his waist. Ella and Creighton stand with Six on the shore. I drop the chest and slap my wet hands on Hector's shin, arm, neck, all around his crushed back, hoping and praying the icy feeling will arrive in my fingers.
"He's dead," Creighton says, pulling on my shoulders.
I don't give up, hating myself for not trying the same thing on Adelina. I touch Hector's face. I run my hands through his gray hair. I even levitate him a few centimeters off the sand and try it all over again. But it's true. He's gone.
Chapter 33. I'm hovering over grass. I'm floating over a river. I feel wretched and stiff, and every time I dare to open my eyes, I'm either bouncing over a log or gliding up a rocky hill. There's a constant noise, and it takes me several minutes to realize it's the sound of Bernie Kosar's hooves. I'm draped over his back, and we're moving quickly through the mountains.
"You awake?"
Nine asks. I raise my head to see him sitting behind me, both of our chests under his arms. "I don't know what I am," I say, closing my eyes.
What happened?"
"You ran right into the blue stuff. That's the last thing on Earth or Lorien or anywhere you want to do." He sounds pissed, like I just tore him away from his own birthday party. "What about Cetricus Ra?" I ask.
"Somewhere in the mountain, the coward. I couldn't find another way in, and I looked."
I push myself up BK's hide in a panic.
"Where's Sam?" "Not a chance for. Your buddy is either long gone, or he's hanging upside down staring at the wrong end of a knife."
I vomit. Bernie Kosar quickly lowers himself so I can slide off his back, and then I vomit some more. Nine tries to explain the sickness will go away soon, that he's gone through it several times when he tried to escape his cell, that the healing stone seems to be powerless against the force field's effects, but I'm too dizzy with visions of Sam being tortured to listen. My sickness is from my betrayal, not from some Mogadorian force field. I don't think I'll ever be able to forgive myself. It's my fault he went in there, and it's my fault he was left behind. I turn my back on my best friend.
"We have to go back," I say. "Sam would go back for me."
"Not a chance. Not yet. You're too much of a mess, and like you said before, we need numbers." I pull myself to my feet, but fall onto my hands and knees almost immediately.
"You don't even know where we are. We're a couple of miles from your car," Nine says.
He must see the confusion on my face, because he smiles and pats Bernie Kosar's back.
"Turns out I can talk to animals. Who knew? Bernie Kosar here is leading the way. Let's jet."
I'm too weak to protest, and I climb back up. Bernie Kosar gallops as fast as he can, his belly brushing the tops of shrubs and felled trees as he hurdles us over obstacles. My body aches, and I clutch his side as we zigzag up and down the mountains and hills, splashing through two fast-moving rivers. The stars slowly reveal themselves, high in the sky, and I know that one of them, far, far away, is the slight glimmer of Lorien's own sun, shining its bright light upon a hibernating planet.
"So, what's our next move?" Nine asks as we trot among the shadows.
I'm silent, wondering what Henri would say our next move would be. I wonder what kind of look would be on his face. Would he beam with pride over me retrieving the chests, rescuing a member of the guard, and killing so many Moogs in the process? Or would he be disappointed in me for not taking on the leader when I had the chance, and for leaving Sam behind? Visions of Sam locked behind one of those steel doors come to me every few seconds, and I watch my tears glide down BK's neck. I hate to think it, but I'd rather he die than be tortured.